All right. So first of all, let's go over what it is that the TRICARE contributes to military costs, because I think it's bigger than people often realize.
Yeah, well, the total military health care system, including TRICARE, is about 10% of the base DOD budget, so about $52 billion a year. So it's a major part of the budget, and it's actually the fastest-growing area of the defense budget. Military health care costs grew by 85% in real terms over the past decade. So, you know, the Pentagon and the White House realize that that's something that can't continue in the future, especially if we have a flat or declining defense budget, or else it'll just start to crowd out spending on other things.
So is that what the former Defense Secretary Robert Gates meant when he said this is eating us alive?
That's exactly what he meant.
But even so, there are promises that have been made to our military personnel and veterans. So how are they able to rectify that? I mean, you got to somehow balance that.
Yeah, so that's what makes this a difficult issue. And what the president proposed last week in his deficit reduction plan, and keep in mind, this is a $4 trillion deficit reduction plan. About 1% of it affects DOD spending. And so what he proposed basically was, you know, you keep your TRICARE benefits as they are for military retirees, but you have to pay a little more in co-pays for prescription drugs. So you still get the benefit of drug coverage. You just have to pay a bit more. And specifically, they're targeting the most expensive drugs, which are the name brand drugs, rather than generics. So you would pay more, I think up to, you know, $45 or more for filling a prescription of a brand name drug, but you could still get the generic for free through their mail order system. So that's the largest change. The other change they proposed was for the TRICARE for Life system. Now, that's the Medigap policy that covers military retirees that are on Medicare, so over the age of 65. TRICARE for Life covers basically everything that normal Medicare does not cover. That's a relatively new benefit. 10 years ago, it didn't exist, but it's been added over the past decade. And when it was added, there was no enrollment fee to take this plan. And so what they're doing now is instituting a $200 a year enrollment fee, which is about one-tenth of what the average Medigap plan cost in the private sector. So it's a relatively modest fee, but together these two proposals would save about $21 billion over the next 10 years.
I want to just clarify something. That enrollment fee would be $200 a year every year, so you'd have to re-up?
Yes, it's like an annual premium to join that plan. Now, in the private sector, a Medigap plan typically costs about $2,000 a year.
Well, let me ask you this then. Would this be something that would be retroactive to people who are already in the plan, or would it only apply to people who are just now beginning to be incorporated into the plan? And that question also would apply to the drug copay and the regular TRICARE, too.
Yeah, and my reading of their proposal is these things would be phased in and they would start to take effect now to everyone who's in the plans. They would phase them in, so by 2013 or so, people who are in the plans would be paying the higher fees.
We're speaking with Todd Harrison, Senior Fellow at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments. Does it look like this is a thin wedge of a larger program to eventually really get some reining in of TRICARE and military medical costs, or is this just a modest proposal for the time being?
And I think this is, a serious proposal that they're making that would help curb the growth and the cost of these programs. I think this is kind of getting a wedge in there and starting it. And really, you can also look at it in this $4 trillion deficit reduction plan. A lot of it deals with the major entitlement programs in government. Social Security actually didn't deal with, but Medicare, Medicaid, and the growth of healthcare costs in these other programs. So this really fits in with the rest of the proposals in terms of entitlement reform in the government.
So, but is it a done deal? I mean, are they going to have to debate it, or is it just rote?
It is far from a done deal. This is the president's proposal that he is sending over to the super committee and asking them to consider. $4 trillion in deficit reduction is far more than the super committee has to do. They're only charged with doing $1.2 to $1.5 trillion in deficit reduction. So they can take this proposal, look at it, consider it, maybe take pieces of it and use it, or just disregard it altogether. So this is far from becoming law.
And I got to ask, I mean, we've talked a lot about entitlements and how expensive they are, but how they're also the third rail. People are really hesitant to touch those. Would this be, for lack of a better term, sort of a safe entitlement to monkey around with?
No, I think this is also one of those third rails. A lot of the retired military community and the associations that represent their interest, they're already gearing up to fight against this and any change to military retirement benefits. So I think this proposal is stepping all over third rails in that sense, not just in military entitlements, but in Medicare and Medicaid as well. So it's going to make it difficult to get through. But to be honest, any serious effort at reducing the deficit is going to require addressing some of these third rail issues.
And can you give us an idea of the overall health care costs the nation faces long term because of military activity? I'm thinking of what the VA future costs will be because of the great number of returnees that are injured and have long term problems from Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah, and that's a great question because, it's important to keep in mind that here we're just talking about the military health care system. The veterans health care system costs just about as much. That's outside the defense budget. We spend about $50 billion a year on veterans health care. Right now, those veterans health care costs are dominated by Vietnam-era veterans. It takes about 30 or 40 years before the veterans' benefits peak after a conflict. So we could expect 30 or 40 years from now, the veterans that are coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan today, that's when we should start to see their health care costs actually beginning to peak. And it's really hard to predict what those costs are going to be in the future. I've seen some estimates that it could total $1 trillion or more. But the injuries that we're seeing from these conflicts are very different. So it's hard to predict, how they're going to manifest themselves 30 or 40 years from now.
So is it safe to say that, not to be crass, but the Vietnam generation will eventually pass on so that we might have a trough for a few years before the current generation of Iraq and Afghanistan kicks in the way that the Vietnam is now?
Yeah, I mean, that may be the case. We've seen that, just looking at the statistics, and it is sad, but the World War II era veterans are dying off in significant numbers. So we see the cost of treating World War II era veterans is starting to come down. The Vietnam era veterans are really beginning to peak now. They're going to start to come down, in the next decade or two. And then after that, we should see the Iraq-Afghanistan veterans start to peak. So, it goes in cycles like that. If you look at the budget, you see waves in it for veterans' health care spending. But it's something that's really difficult to predict that far in the future.
Is something like that also considered an X factor when it comes to how they break down these numbers? Because you think of veterans, not all veterans are in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, although some are, but many are, as you said, 25, 30-year-old men and women who are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. So do they factor that in there as to who this is going to impact?
When they're projecting veteran spending, they do try to do that. And keep in mind, the age of the veterans population and, the level of disability of the different people and then what they qualify for. Nevertheless, it is still hard to do. If you take, for example, a lot of the people coming back today have traumatic brain injuries or they have PTSD. And so those are injuries that we did not see in large numbers in previous conflicts like we're seeing today. And part of that is just due to the great advances in battlefield medicine, that people that might have died in previous conflicts on the battlefield, now they survive. So we don't necessarily know what their medical issues are going to be, far into the future. So trying to plan for that is difficult.